I'm farming and I grow it. I'm farming and I grow it.
Talking our way through preparing for winter gardening.
A harsh winter, yes. I have my fingers crossed for a very harsh winter.
And we have one more benefit of cold, other than red noses and runny noses.
Well, yeah, that's not much of a benefit. And I'm a super wimp. I've been here for 51 years. In fact, I've lived in within 5 miles of the studio right here for the past 51 years. So when it drops down to 39 degrees, I'm...
Heidi, you do the chores this morning, honey.
Yeah, exactly. You go take care of the chickens.
Heidi, honey, I'll make breakfast.
I'm hiding out. Yeah, exactly. So the cold helps things grow. When it gets too warm for broccoli, for cabbages, for those kinds of things, they'll bolt or go to seed. And once they bolt or go to seed, once it warms up a bit, then lettuce will go bitter. A lot of the greens are no longer palatable. You know, they become chicken food.
Compostable.
At that point. That's right. They go in their compost bin, or so that it really helps. It really helps, especially our winter vegetables grow if it stays cold.
And when you say stay cold, are we looking for a threshold, or is that back to our zone map where we can get more details about that?
Because exactly.
It's so different depending on your elevation.
Exactly. And just to be straight with everybody, I've lived in the valley for 51 years. That means I've only grown food here in the valley. So when it comes to growing in Prescott or Cottonwood or Sedona, I'd have to go relearn that.
And that's your zone map, and a lot of the learning would be just what plants are there. The soils are kind of the same.
Yeah, you know what? That's two really good points. Observing. You know, one of the things that I did for a long time when I moved into my neighborhood is I paid attention to what other people were doing and what was growing. And then you just start mimicking that. That's one of the big things behind permaculture. You know, I study and teach permaculture. It's the art and science of working with nature. But the first premise of permaculture is to stand back and observe. See what's already working in your area. If you're in Sedona and you haven't gardened before, find a gardener that's already gardening. Find a community garden and connect with them. And I know there's a bunch of y'all up there in, you know, the Sedona Cottonwood area that are doing great gardening work. So observe and go connect with your fellow gardeners and farmers and see what they're doing. That'll help a lot.
And when I say the soils are the same, I'm meaning in that they're not great soils. Arizona's not known for its great soils for natural gardening. Uh-huh. We need to add a lot of organics. Right. We need to mycorrhizas, all the things we've talked about with Farmer Greg before.
Exactly.
What's the name of the tanks green stuff?
Farmer Greg's planting mix. Yeah, that's for your gardens and for planting trees. So that was the other thing that you brought up a moment ago, and that's healthy soil. Go out and observe. Make sure that you know what's growing. Plant what's in the right season, but then you need to make healthy soil. And in the low desert, in the desert, we have less than 1% organic matter in the soil. So the fix for most of our broken soils is add lots and lots and lots of compost, lots of planting mix to your soils. In fact, often what I will do is I will add 4 to 6 inches worth of compost on top of dirt and then just plant, and I let the plants do the work. So that's the other thing your job is to make healthy soil, because without healthy soil, things aren't going to grow as well. And they're not going to taste as good and be as nutritionally dense.
What has this rain done?
Oh, my gosh. We had a magical time at the Urban Farm. So one of the things that I've done, I've been there at the Urban Farm for 29 years. And for those of you who don't know it, the Urban Farm is my house. It's near 16th Street and Glendale Avenue. So it's right in North Phoenix. And it's my place to experiment. And I experiment there a lot. And I've worked really hard on building healthy soil, and healthy soil has a lot of organic matter in it. So there was one morning when we got 2 inches of rain in 2 hours. The water was coming off the roof. I have water harvesting in place as well. And the water was coming off the roof, and it was puddling in one of my orchards in the backyard. And within an hour and a half after the rain stopped, all that water was soaked in. I've worked really hard over the past 29 years to add lots and lots of organic matter so that my soil is like a sponge at the urban farm. So when you're building soil, you're not only sequestering carbon from the atmosphere, but you're also building a sponge that holds all that water.
And if you've ever noticed the rain, generally speaking, our clays do hold a lot of soil. They're very expansive.
Mm-hmm.
But our biggest problem is runoff.
I mean, it
comes, it goes. That's one thing that always kind of humors me when you see somebody caught in a flash flood. I'm like, just sit there and wait a couple hours.
Yeah.
It's all going to dry up here in a very short period of time.
As long as you're not in the water.
Right, right.
As long as you're not in the water, exactly.
What has that done for the plants? I mean, there's there is something that can't be done in irrigation, whether it's flood or drip or, you know, with the hose. There's something that comes with rain.
Yeah, one of my neighbors said something very interesting to me recently. He said, Greg, have you ever noticed after a thunderstorm, your plants green up a lot?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah. He said, that's because the thunderstorms, the lightning is sequestering nitrogen out of the air. And when the rain comes down, it's got a little bit of nitrogen in it. I don't know if that's the truth or not, but
it does green up.
It does green up big time, big time. So
you know what? Until we're proven wrong.
Yeah, there you go. Have you noticed when we're driving around town how green it is? It's amazing to me. I was over here in Piestewa Park. I was driving down the 51 the other day, and there was just this nice green grass. It's not grass, but greenness that ran right up the mountain. And it's like, wow.
You could look at Camelback Mountain and see how green it is and determine. We've had a couple of inches of rain recently.
Right. So we're going to have a really nice weed winter this winter, but we're also going to have a really nice wildflower.
And it came right at the perfect time where we're past the triple digit weather,
mm-hmm.
extremes, a ton of moisture, an explosion of growth. One of the things, if we get that cold winter, a lot of this new growth could get frozen because that's the most susceptible to freeze. So
What
are we going to do now to protect this and manage it into the spring?
Yeah, so protecting plants. Mostly at my house, I don't plant things out of season, so I don't have any tomatoes. There's a little bit of basil growing out in front that came up from seeds, but I don't plant things that need to be protected. If you have a new citrus tree, so we're talking about trees now. So if you have a new citrus tree that you've planted in the last 6 months or a year, if it gets really cold, I would definitely cover it. You don't want to use plastic. You want to use an old sheet or frost cloth that you can get at the hardware store. Go see Barry at Barry's Hardware. And you don't want it touching the top of the tree. If you can, put a tent up over the tree. The thing is about that, and
the airspace.
Yeah, exactly. You want the airspace. And if the frost falls, because frost will fall out of the air, moisture will fall out of the air. If it lands on top of a sheet that's on top of a plant, it'll freeze the tips of the plant. So the good news is that if you have a well-established, it's been in the ground a couple of years, citrus tree, you don't have to worry about it. If you have deciduous trees lose their leaves in the wintertime. It's because they're going dormant. The deciduous trees like the cold, so you don't have to worry about covering them. For the decorative trees out there, like ficus trees, not figs that you eat, but ficus trees, if you got a small one, you probably want to cover it because they get tinged pretty good. Along with bougainvilleas. But mostly at the urban farm, I don't plant things out of season, so I'm not ever covering anything. It just makes my urban farmer job a whole lot easier.
Is there any truth to the matter that, with the holidays coming up, people have outdoor lights around a tree? Does that keep it warm?
Yes, it will absolutely keep it warm with one caveat.
What's that?
You don't want to use LED lighting.
True.
You don't want to use LED lights.
The old C4 lights.
Yeah.
Of course, your electric bill is going to skyrocket, but hey.
Well, I don't know about skyrocket, but it's going to go up a little bit. One of the cool things that I've done in the past on a really cool night is I'll put a tent over my garden or a tent over, you know, a tree. And then I'll get one of those 7-day candles. You know, you just get them at the 99-cent store, and they're usually about a foot tall, and light it and put it underneath the tree, and it kicks off just enough heat from that flame, just a candle flame. It kicks off just enough heat to keep it from freezing underneath the tent. Now, you are playing with fire, so you have to barely be conscious of that and make sure that the sheet's not anywhere near
the
fire.
Can't blow onto the candle.
Right, exactly. But I've had really good success with that before.
Okay, so there's a great example of putting out luminarias there this year.
There you go.
There you go, man.
Absolutely.
Ho, ho, ho.
Absolutely. And then, you know, you can get into greenhouses and hoop houses and stuff like that. If you're actually going to physically build a greenhouse, that, you know, that's a big project, bigger project.
What's a hoop house?
A hoop house, generally hoop houses, you can make them out of, you know, take a 3/4-inch piece of PVC and fold it in, you know, fold it into a hoop so that you, and I usually put rebar in the ground on either side of it. So then I have
slide the PVC over the rebar.
Right. So then you have this, you know, half circle and, you know, put up 6 of those, maybe 3 feet apart. And then I'll take a piece of PVC and tie it all together at the top to, you know, kind of structurally make it sound, and then drape plastic over it. Just drape plastic over it. And, you know, that's a great way of handling those things.
And that's something you would put over a vegetable garden. And it's okay to use plastic here because it's not sitting on top. You've got
exactly
all that airspace between the plant material and the plastic material.
Exactly.
Now, is there any consideration for light? Where, I mean, you don't use black plastic. You need a little
right
light to still
you're
get through
use,
to
right,
photosynthesize your
yeah, clear plastic there for
your
sure
leaves. And, is there a certain thickness that you could get too heavy, though, on a white plastic? I've never really experimented with hoop house. I've seen them plenty, but you know, could you get too dark of a white clear one? Or
it doesn't, you know, the clear ones are the, you want clear. They're not too, they're not going to hold back too much light. Thickness, you probably want to go 5-6 mil. And if you're going to set up something that you're going to use long term, you want to get a UV protected plastic that'll last longer. So,
yeah, even that few months that it'll be out there, the UV still comes through plenty strong in the winter, even cold winters. When that sun's out, that UV just breaks down anything that's out there.
Yep, that it does.
All right, we've got one more segment with Farmer Greg talking about winter gardening here at Rosie on the House, urbanfarm.org.
Yep.
You'd also mentioned a planting calendar.
Plantingcalendar.org is my low desert planting calendar. It's free. Just go download it, and then it puts you on our email list.